You want to give some background, everybody, what you're
doing? I'm writing an article for Snow Lion on the importance of monasticism in American Buddhism in the West. And we're working on this. So is that okay? And then maybe if you had questions that I didn't think of, that would be really helpful. Okay. So my first question is, traditionally, what is the place of monasticism in Buddhism? I know as an Eastern tradition. So if you could tell me a little bit about the history of monasticism in Buddhism.
The history of monasticism and the roles of the monastics. Well, from the time of the Buddha, the monastics were the, you know, that it's, you go through a ceremony that's called going forth, and it means you go forth from the household life. So the idea is that the monastics are living a certain kind of lifestyle that is different from a householder lifestyle in that you don't have so many of your own possessions, you don't work for a living, and you put your energy into your spiritual practice. So it's a reorientation of how you live, both physically how you live and then mentally how you live too, where you direct your energies. And so, you know, from the time of the Buddha, you had a monastic community. It was a community of renunciants. Yeah. And then they initially were wanderers, and then they began to settle down and have monasteries and so on. And so because the monastics had, quote, quote, left the householder life, yeah, and then they had more time because they weren't working for a living. They didn't have to raise kids. They didn't have to, you know, have a social life and these kinds of things that you normally do when you have a family life. Therefore, they had more time to hear the teachings, to study them, to put them into practice, and then to also give the teachings themselves. So the monastics and the monasteries became the kind of central locations, or the people were the, you know, the holders, the ones that preserved the tradition throughout the ages because of the lifestyle they lived.
Why is that important? Why is it important to preserve?
Yeah. Well, it's important to preserve the teachings because if they weren't preserved, we wouldn't have met them. Yeah, and because the teachings have the possibility to bring happiness to individuals when they practice them. So preserving the teachings, both the oral tradition and the written tradition, as well as the practice tradition, you know, so that future generations of people can have this. One of the big challenges to monasticism nowadays is that lay people are becoming more active. That isn't necessarily, when I say challenge, it doesn't need to be seen as a problem to monasticism, but rather things are shifting in that, for example, in ancient, you know, in cultures, let's say even 100 years ago, the lay people were very busy with their lives. They didn't go on retreats. They would make offerings at the temple. They would hear teachings maybe on new and full moon days. They would keep the five precepts. But they didn't have the leisure in their lives to go on long retreats, to, let's say, attend Dharma teachings consistently, things like that. That's beginning to change now. And I think, especially in the West, that the, you know, I was talking about this Friday night, that the Dharma Center is a new phenomenon. You didn't have this in Asian Buddhism. You had temples and you had monasteries. But now we have Dharma Centers where lay people come and where lay people can come consistently for teachings, and where some of those lay people then become people to teach themselves. And so that's changing the kind of landscape of traditional Buddhism where the monastery was the center. That change brings up some very interesting questions, okay? Because if you have lay Dharma teachers who are subsisting on the offerings that they receive, but then they're supporting families, whereas a monastic, you know, monastics don't have families to support, so whatever offerings they receive, that's fine. And then, you know, traditionally they were given food and robes and the requisites were provided for them. But, you know, what happens when you start having lay people who are existing off of monetary offerings, but they have families that they have to support? No? Because then, is it the responsibility of the Dharma students then to support the whole family? And then the lay teachers who need to have a certain income if they have a middle class lifestyle, then do they only go places where they can receive a lot of offerings? Or do they start charging for teachings? Yeah, so it brings up a number of questions as that's happening.
So why is it not just okay to continue with having the Dharma centers and the retreat centers? Why is it necessary to establish a monastic tradition, say, at Travasti Abbey?
Okay. Well, I'm not saying it's not okay to continue the Dharma centers. Mm-hmm. I think Dharma centers are great, but I think monasticism has a definite role in this country in that, of many, many different ways. Monastics in some way act as the conscience of society, and especially in a society that's very consumeristic, where everything is, you know, I have to have a lot, and I get my identity through the possessions that I have, through the people that I know, through the status and accomplishments that I have, that monastics, just by our lifestyle, challenge all those assumptions. You know, because if we live a simple life, well, do you really need all that stuff to be happy? You know? And if you live in a community where you dress like everybody else and, you know, you're trying to cooperate in a community and not just be the big star, well, are you really happy having so much status and fame? You know? So just by the lifestyle, it's kind of challenging, acting as a conscience to society. And I think having monastics and a monastery also give people a sense of hope for society. You know, I mean, maybe you should talk about your feeling, because you wrote a very lovely letter to the Abbey about what you saw, how the Abbey affected you. So maybe you should say what you think instead of me saying what you think.
No.
Please.
Oh, it's like trying to recreate like the introduction type of thing. Because it was coming so much from the heart when I wrote that. I have so many feelings about that, so I don't want to, you know, I think this is an important interview that has to happen with Venerable.
Can I talk to you afterwards?
Yeah, you want to talk to me afterwards, I'd be happy to do that. I think that's important.
Okay.
Yeah. But basically, I mean, because some of the points that she had brought up was that, you know, when you think that there's a group of people living in this way, it gives you some feeling of, oh, there's some hope. You know, these people aren't perfect. I mean, don't put monastics up on some chair next to God, okay? yeah. But it just, oh, here are people who are trying. Who are trying to live an ethical life, who are consciously cultivating love and compassion, who are consciously trying to get along with each other as they live together. And so just knowing that there's a group of people who are consciously doing that gives you a feeling of hope, you know, in society and in the nature of human beings.
What it does for me as a lay person, because I see someone venerable, or and Senkye, and these are people who were once part of this Dharma Center and friends, is that they show to me that it's possible, that there's a possibility of attaining a clearer state of mind. That, oh, it's possible. If Venerable can do this, perhaps I can do that. If Senkye can do that, perhaps I can do that. So it creates that level of aspiration that's different for me than you know, I mean, I love my Dharma friends, but it's a different level of aspiration than either my Dharma friends or even a lay teacher. They create a level of aspiration. I can aspire. It's like an expectation, like a very good teacher sets a level of expectation. So it's an expectation thing.
But it's not that you want to become a monastic, is it? I mean, when you say setting that level of expectation.
It could be.
So it's
just a personal question.
Yeah, well, it's a personal question, but it's also a question that leads to monasticism isn't for everyone. Pardon?
But this is just one life. I can aspire for. I mean, having the Abbey there allows me to make aspirations for future lives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any thought that is exclusive.
Mm-hmm. So it could be part of the continuum of your path. So are there any drawbacks to monasticism?
There's only drawbacks to anything if your mind makes drawbacks.
So where is monasticism in the American Buddhist tradition now? Would you say it's in its infancy? Or?
Well, it depends on the community. In Asian Buddhism in America, in the ethnic temples, monasticism is still very strong. And the Asian community really values their monastics and values the monasteries. In kind of the non-Asian American Buddhism or the convert Buddhism, then monasticism is very much in its infancy. And it's an interesting one monk who's my friend was saying that monastics are now the people of color in American Buddhism. You know, not only are our robes colorful, but in the landscape of American Buddhism, we often receive the short end of some things, in the sense that because it's very interesting when you have a very democratic culture, and I don't want to make this analogy of color too, don't make it inherently existent, please. you have this democratic culture, and so then you have lay teachers coming in who, whereas in put it this way, in Asia, the lay teachers have great respect for monastic way of life and praise it. In American Buddhism, since everybody always wants to be doing the best, and if you choose not to be a monastic, then sometimes people, they feel like they have to justify that, and so then they do it by putting monasticism down. Okay? So you will hear people, and sometimes even lay teachers, saying that it's irrelevant. You know, now we don't need the monastic community to preserve the teachings. But I question that because, you know, having a monastic community gives you a locus, a physical locus of preservation for the teachings, whereas a lay teacher's family house doesn't give you that. Yeah, you can't just go there when you need that inspiration. Sometimes people say, oh, if you're a monastic, you're just escaping your emotional problems, your relationship problems, okay? You know, so you have relationship problems, or you have, you don't feel easy about sex, and so you just avoid all those issues by ordaining. Wouldn't it be nice if we could avoid all of our relationship and get rid of them just by changing our clothes? That would be great. You know? It's not like that, though. Not like that at all. You have to face all these things no matter where you live and who you are. You know? Yeah. You have people who say, especially in a Protestant culture, go to work. Why should I support you? You know, I want to practice as much as you do. Why should I support you in practicing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas in Asia, people look and say, oh, wow, these people are able to keep a level of discipline that I'm not able to keep. You know, they can be celibate. That's good. I don't want to be celibate. I can't keep celibate, you know. But I admire them for doing what they're doing. Or they have a simple lifestyle. They don't have a lot of possessions. I can't do that, you know, and I don't want to do it, really. I want to have a lot of stuff, and I want to have a family, and I want to have these emotional ties. But in Asia, they respect the choice of the monastics and the lifestyle. In America, I think people sometimes just, you know, either put it down in order to say the way I'm living is okay, or because it's so much of the Protestant culture, they just say, well, monasticism is old-fashioned. It went out with Martin Luther, you know, so several centuries ago. So why are we hanging on to it now?
Well, how would monasticism, say, American Buddhist monasticism, how do you see it as having to be different from the Eastern tradition in terms of organizationally,
good question.
How you...
Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, that we are different from the Eastern tradition. First of all, women have a much stronger role in Western monasticism than in Asian monasticism, okay? And I think as we're setting up monasteries in the West, you know, the role of women is becoming more prominent than it was in Asia. I think also in the monasteries, it's an interesting thing because I just came from this monastic conference. We had one session on seniority and leadership. Now, because in monasticism, there is a kind of hierarchy. I mean, in all societies, whether you're lay or monastic, there's hierarchy. But the hierarchy is very intentional, and it serves a very clear purpose. And so Western monastics are kind of verbalizing that purpose, you know, in the sense that I think in Asia it was taken for granted. You know, in Asia it was taken for granted that as a junior monastic, you serve your seniors. In American monasticism, we explain to the juniors why it helps them in their own practice to serve the seniors. It's not just taken for granted that they're going to or that they're going to like it, because we all come into monastic life with authority issues, big time. Americans have such authority issues. So, you know, in Western monasteries, you really spend some time talking about authority issues, talking about how beneficial it is for us to learn to see others' good qualities and to respect others' good qualities, talking about how, you know, in one way you listen to your seniors, but in another way, if your seniors are doing something non-virtuous, how you should step up and speak about it. Yeah? So you talk about this much more overtly in Western monasteries. Okay. Is that making some mm-hmm, sense mm-hmm, to you? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because we can't just take it on from Asia, because it's not so much our culture. So especially the first generation of monastics, we're seeing what is of value in that hierarchical system in Asia, and adapting that and then clearly stating its purpose, but then also seeing that some of the unhealthy aspects, like blind obedience, we have to get rid of. But what's very interesting is in working with Americans, there's one aspect of our culture, and this has to do with our authority issues, in which we want to just surrender and be blindly obedient to somebody. Yeah? And I think this is one of the... I mean, we just have such an interesting American culture, you know, because we want to take somebody, put them up as a star, you know, because everything is on personalities now. Yeah? So you put somebody up as a star. Then you become blindly obedient to them. And you talk about surrendering. But instead of surrendering your ego, you surrender your wisdom. And then when you figure out that you've been surrendering your wisdom, you blame them, and you rebel against authority. Okay? So this is kind of, you see in Western society a lot. And so, at least in my experience, we're trying to like bring all this out and talk about it, and talk about these issues, and then also really shift the focus from, instead of, you know, one person who's a star, to the whole community. Yeah. But that's a really interesting thing, because I see even within the Abbey, people try and put me up as the star. I'm the star, you know, and like I'm going to be the one why everybody's going to support the Abbey because of me. And I keep telling them, this is very dangerous. You shouldn't do that. Okay? It's the community that's important. It's the community and what we're all doing together. And if you put too much in, you know, on the existence of one person, when that person dies, then what happens to the rest of the community? It's not healthy. Yeah? So it's this thing of, you know, kind of the American tendency, and you're trying to break it. Yeah.
What will be the contribution of American monasticism? As we've gathered some benefit from Eastern traditions, what do you see as our
contribution from American monasticism? I think in the long term, the monastery still will be, and the monastics still will be, the main preservers of the tradition. I think lay teachers will help a lot, but I think in the end, you know, that the monasteries will play a very important role in that, and that the monasteries will play a very important role in holding on to the goal of nirvana and enlightenment as the reason for practice. Okay? Because I think what can easily happen in Dharma centers, and we talked about this Friday, is that people come and they have a problem, and the Dharma addresses their this life problem, and they feel satisfied with that. And so nirvana, enlightenment, that's too abstract. Nobody really thinks, you know, I'm in samsara, I want to be liberated from samsara. They just think, I have relationship troubles, I need to learn to control my anger. So while that's good and that's beneficial and Dharma helps those people, the goal for which the people come is limited. Okay? And so I think the monastics, because the main thing that makes you choose a monastic lifestyle is the wish to get out of samsara, the wish for liberation. And so you're renouncing the external factors that are inhibiting your practice. You're renouncing the objects of your attachment, journey in a certain direction. And so the monasteries really hold that goal of nirvana and enlightenment very dearly. Dharma centers don't necessarily do that, because the reason why the people are coming to the Dharma centers is different than why they come to the why monastics come to the monastery. Yeah. So I think Dharma centers will probably serve more of the thing of using meditation for stress reduction, how to manage emotions, things that benefit people quite directly in their lives. And I think the monasteries will also do that, but they will be the main ones that really emphasize the goal of nirvana and enlightenment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Well, I on the subject. I come from the Protestant, long history of Protestant side, so this is not me, but it seems to me that there, the model in Catholicism is that there are monastics that live in monasteries or are sequestered and spend time meditating and such. And then there's those who are who teach and are nurses and run hospitals and do a whole different type of thing. And so in part of it is numbers in that, but it seems to me that that model, that secondary model, as mentioned, is not as prevalent in Buddhism. And therefore also it, the monastics in Buddhism seem to relate almost solely to adults. I mean, certainly there are children and stuff that come, but it's more, whereas in Catholicism, there's certainly a lot of monastics who relate to children because of the schools and things. And so it's kind of twofold. It's like, is that model not appropriate for Buddhism? Is it something that emerges over time? And the other side of it is, and the other thing is, all that's happening in that monastics has been very negative because of some of the ethical issues. And so I'm wondering how that influences. So there's actually two questions there. The other one is the ethics in the. Because you were saying it's, some people think it's outdated. Well, I think some people feel like they've been threatened by it, so they don't want it anymore because they see the danger in it or whatever. So anyway, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Actually, this is a very interesting point, one to bring out, that most people in America, when they think of monasticism, they think of the Catholic Church. And then they carry their image of Catholic monasticism projected onto Buddhist monasticism. So if you have issues with they're escaping from society and they don't do social work, then you bring that into Buddhism. Or if, you know, the recent scandals in the Catholic, you know, with the Catholic priests, then you bring that into Buddhism and you doubt the monastics. You know, so there is a transference there that Western monastics have to work with. You know, the projection of what people carry over from Catholicism. In regard to your question, you know, about the more meditative side or the more socially active side, you know, this is another challenging feature that monasticism in the West faces, because in Asia, the communities were they focused on meditation and so on, and just by the way they were, they didn't have to establish special socially engaged projects. In other words, like in Thailand 100 years ago, or in Tibet 100 years ago, the monastery was also the school. It was where you came. So it wasn't like there was, in America, there was a Catholic monastery and then they set up a school. But the monastery itself was the school, and you got an education by becoming a little monk, you know. Unless you were wealthy, and then they had schools for the wealthy. And the monasteries were also the hospitals. If people had mental problems, you went to the monasteries and they would do some pujas or blessings or whatever to cure the mental illness. Often when there were physical illnesses, people would come to the monasteries. So it wasn't like the Catholics where you open a special clinic. Yeah, but at the same, so, you know, and the monasteries, well, were very much the community centers where people came to be with their friends and so on. So you didn't open a special community center. But now, you know, all of that is changing. It's changing in Asia, you know, and it's in the Tibetan society and so on. And so that is also changing the monastics. For example, like in Tibetan society, they never had social welfare institutions because the family unit was very strong, and so families always took care of their own, or the community took care of their own. So they never had, the government having to establish, unemployment pay, you know, or disability or any of that stuff. So as these societies, traditionally Buddhist societies, are modernizing, their social institutions are changing. And then that in turn affects the monasteries and how people perceive the monasteries. His Holiness Dalai Lama nowadays is really calling for Tibetan monastics to to be more outgoing in the community, you know, and do more socially engaged work. And I think that, that's quite useful and quite valid. And I think it also presents this thing of what's a good balance? Because how do you do intensive meditation and also get involved in being socially active at the same time? You know, will we have different monasteries that do different things? Or one way that Buddhist monasticism is different than Catholic monasticism is that we don't commit to a specific monastery and we don't commit to a specific, it's not like there's an order of educators and an order of contemplatives and an order of hospital people. So in Buddhist monasticism, you can do different things at different times in your monastic life. So it could be that changes, and maybe, you know, people earlier on when they have more energy and when they need to focus more on creating merit, then they get involved more in social activities, and then later they become more meditative. Or it could be the opposite, that early on you really do a lot of intense practice, and then later on you take the compassion you've developed through your intense practice out and do more projects that benefit society. So it could go either way, actually. Okay. And then about the scandals, how did you want me to...
Oh, that's right. I think you addressed it. It's more like when you were saying how people think it's old-fashioned. I think I'm projecting on this because I was not part of Catholicism, but what I see people is that you're kind of like, well, there's fewer and fewer of them, first place, than there used to be. And I'm not sure how people relate to them, but I don't know if that... the view that there are scandals in Catholicism, whether that gets transferred over. Do people think that it exists in Buddhism? I don't know. I mean,
I think that to some extent how the Catholic Church has been rocked by scandals does get taken over to Buddhism. There was a period in the early 90s where there were a number of scandals in Buddhism, not only with monastics, many with lay teachers as well. That does.
Mm-hmm. This is more off topic, but it seems in American Buddhism there's two different routes of monastics. There's people who live their life, have families, then later ordained, and then there's younger people who don't have much of experience, or their motivation seems to be different, so there's different challenges. There's different roles that they play in the monasteries and
This is a very good point, a very interesting point, that there's now you see people ordaining who are young and then people ordaining in middle age, and that there's, you know, quite a big difference between them, of course, and that's fine, I think. And I think that the training, in one way, the training is similar for both of them because, you know, you have to learn the monastic discipline and, you know, develop a monastic mind, you know, this whole thing of a monastic mind, how you think, how you, you know, conduct yourself, the things, the cultivation you do. That applies to everybody, whether they ordain when they're young or when they're... But then there's specific issues that arise for each age group, okay? So for the people who ordain when they're middle-aged, they already have, you know, usually they've been married, they've had kids, maybe they're divorced, there's, you know, they might be carrying around pain from their divorce or pain from what's happened with their family. So they have that kind of stuff. They've been accumulating some baggage over the years. So they have that stuff they need to work on. On the other hand, there are people who have had a job and been successful in life, so they come into the monasteries and they have skills to offer to the monastics. So you don't need to teach them how to think on, you know, basic life skills because they've been living on their own. On the other hand, they're middle-aged. They don't necessarily like to have to follow somebody else's instructions. Yeah? Because, you know, when you ordain, you sit at the end of the line. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's somebody younger than me sitting in front of me. And, you know, and so that can become an issue sometimes for the middle-aged monastics. Of, you know, wait a minute, I'm a successful person. You've got to acknowledge me. Yeah. And the young people, you know, they haven't had 20, 30 years to accumulate a lot of baggage, so they don't have that. They don't have, you know, that kind of way of, you know, those kind of authority issues. But on the other hand, they have so much freedom in their life and so many things that they could do that they're confused. You know, because the whole world's there. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I go here? Should I go there? I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what I want to be. And I want to try it all out and then be able to go back in time and make the right decision. You know, which of course is impossible. And so I see young people, you know, having that difficulty of having the confidence in the decisions that they make, because there's so much that you can decide to do. And then there's also, if you get a little bit unhappy with something, you can always change and do something else, you know. Whereas I think people who are older tend to know that if you change and do something else, your problem comes with you. And so they're probably more likely to kind of stay and work through the problem, whereas young people haven't had that experience, and they think, oh, if I go somewhere else and do something else, I won't have that problem anymore. Yeah. So then there's different challenges that each age group faces. And, you know, we're all imperfect sentient beings, and we all start with what are our current issues. Yeah, and we all train, you know, in relationship to that. We all support each other and help each other. So it's not that one age group is better, one age group is worse, or anything like that. I do think if one can ordain when young, it's good, because then you have more time in your life, hopefully, if you live a long life, for study and practice. And so then that can aid in your ability to transmit the Dharma later on, because you've had more years to be able to train. But, you know, everybody's really, really different in that regard. So people have to follow their individual karma and individual differences.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, you know, it might be very interesting for this article to talk to some of the people in the center.
Yes.
And you know, what do you guys think of monasticism? What do you think are the benefits? How does it influence you? And what do you see the challenges as being?